Hello and welcome to another episode of The Podfather. I'm Jordan, as always, joined by Alex.
Hello, everyone. Good morning.
And it's evening where I am. Oh, isn't this fun? Today, we are doing a film that is still in cinemas. I think there's still about, 7 to 10 sessions a day, depending on which cinema you go to. Ocean's 8.
Current movie.
Current movie. We are staying current, like we did a few weeks ago when we went and saw Solo.
Isn't this fun? I feel like our fingers are on the pulse, as they say. We're working. We're making things happen.
We're just right in the zeitgeist right now.
Ah, that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah, absolutely. Not much follow-up today, I don't think.
No, I just had one little thing, which was a video that one of my colleagues sent me, which I actually posted on the Podfather Facebook page. So if you go to the Podfather Facebook page, it's called The Worst Ocean's 11 Movie by a YouTube channel called Mr. Sunday Movies. I hadn't seen this YouTube channel before. I will admit I haven't watched the whole video, but I watched it the first couple of minutes, and they sort of break down the movie and critique it and basically say a lot of the same stuff that we said. So if you want to watch something shorter than Ocean's 11 that breaks it down for you and bags it, then you should watch this video.
Yeah, I watched the full thing. It was very funny.
Oh, you did? Oh, good.
Much funnier than our podcast. I reckon listeners, just jump off this bandwagon and start watching, what's it called? Caravan of Garbage.
Caravan of Garbage, Mr. Sunday Movies. Forget us.
Very funny. It was very funny. And because I also really hated the movie, their little incisive comments were just very funny and like hit the nail on the head for me.
Exactly.
And my only bit of follow-up is that on Thursday night, I went to a Q&A session with your mate, Greg Sestero, for he and Tommy Wiseau's new movie, Best Friends.
Yes. How was it?
It's a two-parter, the movie, kind of like Kill Bill, right? Two volumes. And
Did you see volume two?
I only saw volume one. And
Okay.
Have you seen both?
No, because they're only, I think we're premiering volume two in September at the Prince Charles. I don't think it's actually, they're definitely showing it in September. I've seen volume one. I've seen the cliffhanger.
It's an incredible movie. If you like The Room, it's incredible. If you don't like The Room, you're probably wondering what the fuck is going on.
So you liked it? Like, you actually liked it?
I liked it mainly because of the history between the two of them. And I don't think it's good necessarily. But it blew my mind because, unlike The Room, which is just bad, this film looks really good, like visually, and sometimes comically good. All the cinematography isn't necessarily like serious. There's some bits that are really funny, but Liam and I just had a blast.
I'm glad that you like it because there's definitely mixed views back in the cinema. It's a bit tricky for us because we're all a little bit close to it, especially the staff members who have worked with them for a couple of years in a row now.
Mm.
I think it's fair to say that many of us, even me, after 1 month, only 2 weeks of enduring it, are a little bit burnt out on the whole Room, Tommy Wiseau, Greg Sestero thing. But I also quite liked Best Friends. Obviously, it falls into the same category of this kind of weird, guess not very good movie, but like enjoyable because you know these two people. And one of the best things about Best Friends, I think, is that what the character they gave Tommy, I think, really suits him, actually. And I think he does it really well. Like, definitely compared to The Room.
Yeah, he's not a great actor, but the character suits him.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Greg did a little Q&A, which actually sort of, I think, was a great way to get into the film because it sort of took us into his mindset when making it. And he basically said, they wanted to make a better movie than The Room, but still acknowledge where they came from. Like, they're not going to make the best movie of all time. And he said, maybe one day we'll make a good movie. But this one wasn't it.
Did he say that?
Well, like, he basically implied that this wasn't a good movie, but he did say maybe one day we'll make a good movie.
did he seem to enjoy the whole experience, like asking questions and talking to people? And because one thing that I noticed when we were doing the room stuff is that he seemed a lot more interested when people would ask him about Best Friends or when they would do the Best Friends screening as compared to anything to do with the room. I think he's a bit sick of that, whereas I think he's excited about this movie.
Yeah, and he was able to talk to us about the Disaster Artist as well.
Yes.
Because since he had come to the Nova last, that had come out. And sort of won the, like, they'd been at the Globes and Tommy had done these things. So Greg was able to sort of talk about that stuff too. It wasn't just, hey, lol, I was in a bad movie. He now has a bit of a legacy, which I think is fun for him.
Yeah, yeah, of course. And I think what the Disaster Artist did was somewhat ensured that their little cult following wouldn't fade away. Like, I think it's going to just kind of be there forever now in a funny way. Like, people are always going to find it and watch it and enjoy it. And it's much more broad now after that Hollywood blockbuster Disaster Artist.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like some people went and saw that movie just so they could understand James Franco's movie. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I think they're doing well.
Okay, well, you saw a current movie, Best Friends Volume 1. We watched a current movie, Ocean's 8, which is what we promised everyone we'd talk about today. Should we step on into it?
Let's get into it. Well, I guess, first of all, I gave a little hint at the end of last episode that I enjoyed the movie. So I want to start by saying, what did you think?
Wow. I have not made any notes because I saw this in the movie theater.
Yeah.
And I don't do that when I'm in a movie theater. So, also, I just woke up, so I'm a little bit scatterbrained. So, apologies in advance if I don't know what I'm talking about. But I really, really love this movie. I fucking loved it. It was great.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
Before going into any details, I'm I can't work out. I think it's one of those situations where, you know, if Ocean's 11 2001, if this movie had stood alone without Ocean's 11 2001, it may not have been as good. But because it kind of built on and expanded on from the franchise and then took it and turned it in a different way, they just hit everything perfectly, I think. I don't know. I don't really have much bad to say. It was so much fun. It was a great cast, great acting. One thing that surprised me was that it was much more of a, I guess you could say, remake of the 2001 movie than I was expecting, and we'll get into that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that was a bad thing. I think that just played into its strengths. So I'm very pleased, very happy. I was laughing, I was excited, I was shocked. Great movie. See you next week.
Yep. All right, done. Episode over. No, I think you hit the nail on the head. It was, there are very similar story beats to Ocean's 11 2001, but because the heist is radically different, the fact that some of the beats were the same sort of didn't matter too much, and the characters were also different. And I really like how it expanded on the universe. Like, that was the one thing that really just put a smile on my face, because unlike something like the Ghostbusters reboot, which kind of actively tried to ignore the older films, yet still have, like, Slimer in it. It was a weird, jarring thing. Whereas this one was like, no, we're part of this franchise just as much as 12 or 13. And then they could kind of just play within a universe we know, but in a fresh way. And like, kudos to them for doing that, because that way you get a new audience and an old audience both kind of rooting for the film as opposed to against it.
Yes, yes, exactly. And this movie falls into that category of, like, you know, the all-girl casts, but I wasn't thinking about that at all, like, as it was going through. It all felt, like, natural and real and, like, just like a normal movie, you know?
Yeah, they didn't. Of course, there's no way to make a movie like this and for their gender not to be an issue, because they kind of were saying something by making this movie. But you don't think about it when you're watching it. You're exactly right. It's just kind of like...
Yeah, it's not too on the nose or anything like that.
Yeah, it doesn't distract you from the narrative of the movie, which I think is absolutely great. Do you want to start talking spoilers?
Yes.
Well, as soon as the session as soon as the movie finished, during the credits, I made a bunch of notes because I knew that we wouldn't be recording for a while after I saw it, so I wouldn't forget anything.
Yeah, you saw it, for the listeners, you saw it before we recorded Ocean's 11 2001, didn't you?
I did.
Ah, good job.
Well, thank you. Well, let's talk about a bit the fact that it is very much a sequel of sorts to the Ocean's films. I was worried when I saw the trailer that it would just be, you know, oh, yeah, Danny's my brother, and that kind of be it, because then that would have felt a little shoehorned in and not necessarily organic. But, listeners, they bring back some characters from those movies very organically, I thought, which helped it really feel like it was part of the universe in a way that just saying, oh, lol, George Clooney's my brother, wouldn't have helped.
Yes, and one of my favorite parts of the movie actually happens early on, where Saul Rubin is in it at the start. And I was just like, oh, because, you know, he's from the originals. And I thought he's such a good, out of all of them to cameo, I thought he was such a good one because he doesn't really do much. And he's kind of like the old, you know, rich guy. And I just thought that was really cute and a nice way of connecting them, but then saying we're not going to really use any of that cast or much of that story either. And I guess we should say that Danny Ocean is allegedly dead in this movie, which I have some opinions about.
Yes. Do you buy it? Because,
well, no, I don't buy it.
Debbie doesn't buy it either. She says
as
much.
She doesn't buy it. I don't buy it. That was probably the one little story mechanic that annoyed me about the movie, because I was kind of like, he can just not be in the movie and still be alive. Like, they don't have to say he's dead, because now if they were to do another sequel, which I want them to do, which maybe has like half boys, half girls, like, could you imagine, you know, George and Brad and Sandra and Kate and Anne and, like, you know, some of the other dudes, like, you could almost do a crossover.
Yeah.
Now they have to go through the whole thing of, oh, he's not actually dead. Like, even though that's not really a surprise when it comes to someone like Danny Ocean, I was just like, just don't have him in the movie.
Well,
that would have been better.
I kind of liked the fact that they did that in a way that it wasn't like, no, he's really dead. It was in a way that's like, he won't be in this movie. Don't expect him to pop up. This is Debbie's movie. But like you said, there's still a chance for them, for George to come back and work with Sandy, which, oh, I would love so much.
I think they should. That would be so good. It would just
Can you
be
imagine
so
how
good.
Much that would make at the box office too?
Right? It'd be huge.
Yeah.
Especially after this one that was so good.
Well, evidently, going back to the Ocean's 11 cameos, they did film a scene with Matt Damon and one of the other older guys. There's two old guys. There's Ruben and Saul, I think. You know, there's the one that is at the racetrack, and then there's the rich dude in 11. They both filmed cameos, but they didn't use one of them. And also they didn't use Matt Damon's cameo, which I think is a good idea, because that would have been distracting, I think.
Yeah. No, and that's a smart move, because they're not – it also just – it goes to show that they're not – they weren't relying – too heavily on the success of Ocean's 11, and they also didn't need to. They really didn't even need to do it in that, you know what I mean? They were like, oh, this might be fun, but we'll cut it out, and it didn't matter.
Yeah, but there is one other cameo that happens. And if you haven't seen the movie, I really recommend seeing it, because this is a hashtag spoiler. But towards the end, the Amazing Yen comes, and of course he would be the person to do this job. Like, after we were talking about this last week, he's got a very specific set of skills, and it's just perfect. That was my favorite, like one of my favorite moments in the whole thing, because it just made so much sense.
Yeah, it just made so much sense, and it fit within the Ocean's universe and character set perfectly. And it was, again, just like a really nice little surprise. And I guess if you hadn't seen the original, it still would have been fun, because he had a nice little job to do, but you might not have really got the context of it. But it just put a smile on your face, knowing that he was in the original and knowing the role that he played. And then, uh-oh, here's the Amazing Yen coming out of this little diner cart thing, ready to go.
Yeah.
And he looks so smug.
Yeah, he did. That was a great part. Well, Ocean's 11 aside now.
Sorry, I'm going to roll you back 1 second. Before we say Ocean's 11 aside, I did want to just say about the actual story and how I said that it was a bit more of a remake. The reason why I say that is because obviously it opens in a similar fashion with her in jail, which is how the Ocean's 11 starts with George Clooney in jail. And I was like, oh, okay, that's just a bit of a nod. Like, that's just setting the scene, whatever. But the moment that I realized that it was a little bit more of a remake than a sequel was when about halfway through, Cate Blanchett pulls Sandra aside and says, tell me this isn't about getting revenge on your ex-husband, or was it boyfriend? I don't know.
Either way, ex.
So they kind of use a similar story arc and a similar, you know, flip on the heist where you think it's just about stealing stuff, and then they sort of plant the seed of the ex-partner who then becomes a part of the heist and gets something planted on him, basically the same way that Julia Roberts was involved in Ocean's 11, 2001. And like I said, none of that matters or makes this movie worse. It actually makes it better, because if you remember Ocean's 11, it just, for some reason, it works that they were able to sort of reuse those ideas, but then still make it exciting and do a completely different heist, you know?
Yeah. What I will say is that whereas we talked about with Ocean's 11, it's all about George trying to get Tess back, whereas this movie
is about getting back
at the ex, not getting the ex back, which I think was a great way to use the ex, but to flip that trope on its head.
And to have a little bit of a feminist fuck you to guys type of thing. And I love that. Why not? Get them back. Tell them where to shove it.
That wasn't the overall message of the movie. So there was able to be moments like that. But then at the same time, they were happy to use Yen. And it wasn't like, not that it would have mattered per se if it had been, but it wasn't like a fuck you men movie.
It just happened
to be about women. So... And there's room for both of those sorts of movies. But I think with a franchise like this, they made a really smart call to honor the past and yet give themselves a cool, fun, feminist future.
And whatever the message of this movie is, it's quite a balanced message that seems real and like something to look up to. And I think I said this a couple of weeks ago, but like when I think about like all-girl movie things that I've seen recently. I mean, I guess I haven't seen heaps, but like there was Bridesmaids that comes to mind, and then there was that Tina Fey and Amy Poehler movie that comes to mind. And what I remember about those movies is like lots of immature toilet humor, which there is a place for, but I'm getting a bit sick of and I don't find that entertaining. Whereas this movie, amazing all-girl cast, strong, fun, clever, funny, smart, like everything, but there was no like toilet humor or anything in this movie, you know. It was much more of a
There was a little bit. Part of the heist is literally toilet humor.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true. But you know what I mean.
I do. And I think you're right. It's just there's almost not much to talk about. Like there's so much to talk about, but there's almost not much to talk about in terms of it being like a feminist vehicle, because it doesn't really feel like one, which means it's doing such a good job at being one, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Yeah, I agree completely. Yeah.
Well, should we talk about the cast? So we'll start with Sandy Bullock, because she is the titular Ocean in this movie, living up to Frank Sinatra and George Clooney. I think she's a great Ocean. And she's not playing Danny Ocean or a female version of. This is a Sandy Bullock character. This is Debbie Ocean. Family ties, sure. But I love her so much. She is such a good actor. Goodness me.
She was great. She's a little bit more sinister than Danny Ocean, a little bit more scary. I wouldn't want to double cross her. And although still has the same sort of gravitas where she knows everyone that she needs to know and she can kind of get it all together and she's thinking of the heist and, you know, definitely runs in the family type of thing, which I'm sure they make a few jokes about in the movie.
Well, you're exactly right. She does have the gravitas that George Clooney does, which is necessary for a role like this, Because if you just cast a nobody,
to be an ocean,
then no one's going to buy it. You have to, the actor you cast has to bring some sort of professionalism and charisma that I think Sandy Bullock has in spades.
Especially in a movie like this, which relies on the cast. These movies rely on having these names and actors and actresses to make it work, I think, which is not bad.
Yeah.
It didn't work for the original Ocean's 11, did it, Jordan?
No, it certainly did not.
Then we got Cate Blanchett, who I've just found out was born in Ivanhoe. I didn't know she was born in Ivanhoe.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
They make reference to her being Australian at one point of the movie. But her accent is so strange, don't you think?
I wrote that down as a note because I thought, oh, Cate Blanchett's not doing a very good American accent in this one. And then about 10 minutes in, I was like, oh, no, this is just how she talks because she has the she has the sounds in her R's where we would go teacher. She has sort of developed the American which Nicole Kidman has too, which is – it's just funny when you know how someone speaks with an Australian accent and then you hear them have become a little Americanized, which I think is kind of funny.
Yeah, and I don't know. That actually might be a negative for me because to me it felt like it sounded more like an American trying to do an Australian accent than an Australian with a broken accent.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It kind of actually, that might be one negative that I have is that maybe they should have just made her speak. Like there was no real reason for her to be Australian other than the one joke they made about it. So I don't know. I didn't like that. But we're very sensitive to Australian accents in Hollywood. So it's kind of a bit of an unfair comment. I will say that.
Well, in the Neighbours movies with Seth Rogen, Rose Byrne is in them and she has her Australian accent. And the reason why that is the case is so that when they improvise, they can just think about the jokes and they don't have to think about their accent. So I think there might be something to that in this case too, potentially.
Or, yes, well, you might be right. Or even just because as we're saying, this is an all-girl, I guess, slightly feminist movie, maybe it was just kind of a like, you know, just be yourself type of thing. Use your own accent. You don't need to fake it for anyone type of thing.
Having said
which
that,
I support.
Helena Bonham Carter does that Irish accent, and that's not her normal accent.
Ah, there you go. That's true. What is her normal? Oh, she's from. Oh, here we go. She was born in Islington, just around the corner from me, and she resides in Hampstead, which is a stone's throw from where I'm sitting. I could walk there in about 15-20 minutes.
Go to
knock
her house.
On Helena's door.
Get her on the podcast.
A lot of people live in Hampstead. Do you reckon she'd pop on?
No. Also, I think she might be somewhere else because I saw her hanging out with Rufus Wainwright on his Facebook page.
I'm really behind. I didn't know that her and Tim Burton split up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really behind. I'm about 4 years behind on that one. God.
Yeah, didn't you see all the memes like who's going to get Johnny Depp in the divorce?
No.
Yeah, it was pretty funny at the time.
Let's keep going down the cast list.
Well, what did you think of her?
Normally I don't like her very much, but she was delightful. She was great. She was very fun. She was
very well cast.
I was all about it. Yes, very well cast. Very well cast. I don't know why she annoys me sometimes, but I think it's because she just does a lot of the same roles. But this kind of felt a bit different. So yeah, I liked it a lot.
But you say that because she plays a lot of like whimsical fantasy roles. But like you look at Beatrix, Bellatrix Lestrange in Harry Potter, and then you look at like something like Mrs. Bucket in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, or you know, Fight Club and stuff. Like she does have quite a good range, I think. She's just kind of known for playing
she definitely
one particular
does.
Type of character.
Yeah, she has a good range, but I think you sort of summed it up when you said Harry Potter and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, like, and Lemony Snicket's and Lemire's. Like, I don't know, Alice Through the Looking Glass. Like, I'm just looking at it now. There's just a lot of that same fantasy world, which I think just kind of, I don't know, I just have it in my head, Sweeney Todd. I don't know. I just have it in my head about that for some reason.
Yeah, she's kind of that oddball, Hot Topic, Tim Burton-y roles. That's what you associate
yes,
her with.
Yes, yes, yes. In a similar way that you kind of think a similar thing about Johnny Depp, I think these days after Captain Jack and all of that, I think, I don't know.
Yeah, you think sort of washed up Wife Peter types, I think. No room for that on today's episode. So. Well, who's next? Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway, the most beautiful girl in Hollywood. Woman, and, most beautiful woman in Hollywood.
And do you like Anne Hathaway generally?
I always have. Yeah. I don't know. I've never had any complaints about her. Do you? Do you not like Anne Hathaway?
Well, it's funny because I liked her in Princess Diaries from the get-go.
Sure.
Yep. And she's pretty much good in everything. Like you watch Devil Wears Prada. Fantastic. You watch
fantastic.
Brokeback Mountain. She's one of the best actors in that packed, like, Academy Award nominated movie. Like you said, Les Mis, Interstellar. She's consistently good, but she had like a real image problem, like Catwoman. She had a real image problem.
Catwoman.
Not that she had anything to do with it, but like everyone just kind of hated her for a while. Similarly to how Jennifer Lawrence is kind of getting hate now. I think there was a bit of Anne Hathaway overexposure, and she's always happy, and she's always, I think people think she's a bit fake. That was kind of what the general consensus was. So this role, she kind of plays right into that, which I think is very funny.
Yes, yes, yes.
Like she sort of plays Anne Hathaway as seen by the media in this movie. And then gets her.
I didn't realize that there was I didn't realize there was that kind of backlash. Maybe I didn't quite get the reference or the joke, but I thought that she played that role really well, and I thought, oh, she's just being like a really annoying Hollywood actress, you know, I guess playing into the stereotype. But towards the end of the movie, they kind of flip that on the head a little bit, don't they, and give her a little bit of a wiser role, I think.
Yes, yes. She's not as dumb as she looks. And then, of course, there's Mindy Kaling, who plays a very important role in the heist. And I think, let me just actually take a little side note. The fact that there's only eight of them in the crew, it's so much easier to keep track of what everyone's job is.
Yeah.
Like, what a great idea. Yeah. How economical. Fantastic.
Economical.
But, like, actually, like, you're not thinking about, oh, who does this, what does this person do again? You just kind of know. There's the jeweler, there's the costume designer, there's the, tech person. Like, it was pretty easy to keep track of. I thought Mindy Kaling was great.
She was great. And even though, I mean, you say there's only eight is still a lot of people.
That's true for
a movie. Like, for eight main characters, it's still a lot. So, you know, especially when you think about, I guess, Ocean's 13. I mean, I can't even remember who the new people were compared to Ocean's 11 in those movies.
And, like, there's no, basically none of the women come back. Like, Julia Roberts doesn't come back for that one, and neither does, oh, what's Brad Pitt, what's the, in the sequel, Brad Pitt has a girlfriend. They're sort of working against them for a little bit of the sequel.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah, Michael Douglas is married to her. What's her name? Oh, it's going to drive me nuts. Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, she doesn't show up for the sequel either.
Well, okay, speaking of Mindy Kaling and a few of the other people on the cast, one thing I liked, and I guess this is kind of what Ocean's 11 does as well, is, you know, we've got some... I think they're all well-established actors, but there's definitely, you know, Sandra Bullock, Kate Blanchett, I guess, are the big shots. They're the top two. Mindy Kaling is, I guess, not as well-known. Like, it's a good mixture of different levels of fame in the cast, don't you think?
I think so too. And, like, also of, like, some of them are well-known for being actors, whether in movies or, like, someone like Sarah Paulson is quite well-known for American Horror Story, or Mindy Kaling is known for her show or The Office. But then you've got, like, Awkwafina and Rihanna, who are known predominantly as being recording artists, which I thought was cool too. And they were both really good in it.
Awkwafina was so much fun.
That scene in the subway made me so hungry for Subway. I want to say, just before I forget, yeah. when she steals their watches, I was like, they're in a subway immediately. I was like, yum.
But I swear I've seen her in other stuff. Has she done other things or?
Well, luckily maybe, I did my my research. You know what? She was in Neighbours too.
Maybe that's where I've seen her.
Because we just spoke about that. She doesn't have too many movie credits, though. Yeah, I wasn't aware of her until she was cast in this.
What did you think of Rihanna?
She's so beautiful. Like, that's such a terrible thing to lead with. But, like, when you say, what do I think of her? I just think of that thing where she's walking down the stairs in the red dress, the clip from the trailer.
Well, I was going to say, like, I love how for the whole movie she's in her, like, you know, hoodie, like being the hacker tech girl, like with her hair up and like all, you know, smoking a blunt, like just, yeah. you know, being cool as a cucumber. And then like when they, well, I guess we'll talk about that sort of end scene in a bit, but when she puts on the dress, she steals the show off all of them. I'm sorry, girls.
I'll tell you what, and she's a good actor. Like you've seen it in Battleship.
Yeah, how was Battleship? I've never seen that.
No, I don't think I've seen the full thing either. It's a bad film and she's bad in it. But she was also in the new Luc Besson movie, Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. She's actually done quite a few movies. She was in This Is the End. But she hasn't done too many. But she's great. She should do more acting.
Yeah. I think this was a good role for her as well.
She didn't have to carry anything.
I don't know,
anything.
I guess maybe like I mean, not to, yeah, exactly. And not to like filmography, not to like belittle Battleship or anything like that. But I feel like this is, I guess, Finn Olivia. I don't know. This is probably like the first real proper movie. I don't know. I haven't seen the Valerian movies, but like, I mean, certainly this is the first time she's been in such a high-profile role in a movie, I guess.
Absolutely.
I guess Battleship was high-profile too, but let's just not count
Battleship. High-profile role just in a well-regarded movie, let's say that.
Yeah, yeah,
and she
yeah.
does such a good job.
She does. She really does.
And to round off the eight is Sarah Paulson, who I mentioned is mostly famous at the moment for the American Horror Story TV show. But she has a bunch of film credits. She's quite a well-regarded actor, mainly for TV. Like she was in Desperate Housewives.
Oh wow, that's going back.
But yeah, she's got a few movie credits too, including Carol with Cate Blanchett herself. And she had a fun role, like a mum that's like, oh, I'm not doing the heist, but then she comes in and she's really good at her job.
Yes, 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 yes. And they hint to that she's going to be good at her job because she's got a garage full of, like, stolen goods yeah. anyway. Even though she's, like, quote-unquote retired, she's still, like, playing the hustle. Well, talking about her role, I mean, you know, obviously there's an argument to be made that, you know, who are we? Two dudes talking about an all-girl movie. But what I liked about it is that they did, you know, all have different sort of, I guess, stereotypes. You had the mother, the hacker, the street girl, and I think they mixed all that together really well and didn't, you know, overuse too many tropes or anything like that. It all felt quite organic and real, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and there was no doubt that these people would know each other. Like, it wasn't like, oh, we have to – it's not like when they form the team in the Avengers or something and they're all on different parts of the globe or whatever. It's like, no. These people get along because they're in the world of crime, but like you sort of bought that they were kind of friends, which was a cool element to it actually. Like they weren't on the whole, they were just doing it because they just wanted to, you know, hang out and make some money together.
Well, they're all kleptomaniacs, I think, is the thing.
Yeah.
They can't help but steal things. Oh, and that reminds me of like when she first gets out of jail and like she's in like the department store and she steals stuff by trying to return it. I love that. Oh, that was classic.
Yeah, that was like that's a common move, let me tell you.
Have you done it or it happens at
No, it happens at my work. Yeah, people come in all the time with stolen stuff and they're like, can I get a refund for this? I don't have a receipt. And we're like, if it's a certain amount of money, we have to, or less than a